It seems to me that I've tried long enough to prove to you my love is strong enough.
Just how upset can you get?
How hard to get can you get?
I'd love to get on a slow boat to China, all to myself alone. Get you and keep you in arms evermore. Leave all your lovers waiting on a faraway shore.
Many of us remember Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney crooning away in a duet on a slow boat to China, a song by Frank Lesser.
All to myself alone.
Here's another song with a title just like that by John Prine from 1981.
Let's take a slow boat to China, leave from South Carolina. Let's take our time and go the long way. On a junk boat to Thailand, with your hand in my hand, we'll sure we got something to say.
Douglas Waterman reminds us in his book titled Song that songwriters are always itching to unfold lyrics and melodies that haven't been created yet, a new twist to an age-old theme. Taking a boat to China, perhaps. A crisp hook to a fresh theme, an innovative melody to a title that hasn't been accessed. So, of course, there are many ways to sail to China, and these are just two. As it happens, singer-songwriter Tim Ziegler of northeastern Pennsylvania has been listening to songs and writing songs for a long time. It's probably safe to say that when he hears Slow Boat to China by John Prine, that he notices a number of things, but one of them is the progressive nature of the song, that it starts somewhere, takes us somewhere, in this case China, and we're both here and there when the tune ends. Tim Ziegler has been thinking a lot about his craft, and he'd like to ask others to join him in such musings in a songwriter's roundtable at the Gathering Place in Clark Summit, the third Sunday of each month, from now into spring. The Gathering Place is a new community center that celebrates creativity, education, and the arts in Clark Summit and the Abingtons. The organization has transformed the first floor of the former Clark Summit Firehouse into its new home, and that is a space with an art studio, a kitchen still under construction, classrooms, and an open area that can accommodate small events, exhibits, and theatrical productions. Paula Bailey is a board member of the Gathering Place and program coordinator, and she and Tim Ziegler stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about the Gathering Place and about the Songwriters Roundtable.
First and foremost is that we finally have a home. We opened our facility in February of 17. We weren't quite finished, but we opened it and got going because we wanted the community to see what they were investing in. Our vision as it is the Gathering Place for community, art, and education. And that art portion of it has been what has driven us in numerous ways. As we see people come to us, like Tim, all right, Tim came to us. We just say, yeah, let's do this. So our vision is to create this community center that is based on continuing education, music, and art. And there it is.
And you are in an intriguing space.
Oh, we are. We renovated Beautiful. The old firehouse on State Street. For 10 years, it had been vacant. And when we were looking for a home, we said, how perfect this would be to be in the heart of Clark Summit on Route 6 as people are coming and going, and we're saying, stop, come in, listen.
What drew you then, Tim?
Well, I initially had this idea for a songwriter's roundtable, as it's called, and I tried to think of places where it would be appropriate to do something like that. And I thought of the Dietrich Theater because we worked there, and I thought of the Gathering Place because I knew that it wasn't officially opened. And I knew that they were looking for programming for the coming year. And so I thought it would be a perfect place to situate it. And also knowing that I was making discoveries at the time when I was sort of discovering some of the songwriters that exist in our area that I had no awareness of before, and thinking that it would just be so good if we could have a place where some of their works could be presented and that other people could come to know the songwriters and songwriting that exists in our area.
What kinds of elements would you say, for your own purposes perhaps, or just in general, what kinds of things go into a good song?
It's kind of hard to judge whether something is objectively good or not when we're talking about songs. Where I would stand is that the intention behind a song is maybe of prime importance. This is more a general philosophy of art. I just finished Leo Tolstoy's essay on what is art. And he had some intriguing thoughts in there, and I wouldn't go all the way where he takes it. But he says that art is basically an aspect of communication, of human communication, rather than sort of some kind of exemplification of objective beauty or something like that, which often is a definition of aesthetics or art in some way or another. So I think when it comes to songwriting, I would wholeheartedly accept that kind of idea that songwriting is communication. And as an art, it has as its goal the transmission of an emotion or a feeling or an idea on the part of the creator of the work to the listener of the work, to the hearer of the work, or the one who experiences it. And so I think songs that are meant to manipulate for personal gain, then to me would be bad songs. So songs that have as the sole goal, let's say, and this may sound opinionated, but songs that have as the sole goal financial gain on the part of the writer, to me, seem not to be good, okay? And that doesn't necessarily mean that there's no good in the song, but if they came into existence only because the intent was to gain something personally from it financially, that seems to me to be counter to the essence of writing a song. So to me, writing a song should come from a place of earnestness. That doesn't mean that there's no craft in the process. It doesn't mean you just throw out whatever comes to you. But it means that you are trying to communicate something that is true, something that you believe to be true, or something that is good. And so songs that convey a message to their hearers, I believe, are good. And I would take as an example someone who I've come to admire, who's a local songwriter, Lauren Clark. All of his songs, I think, that I've listened to make you come away with the idea that there are things that we should do in the world to improve the lot of other people. They tell a story of genocide in Sudan. They tell a story of something or other. And in the end, you decide that having heard that, I now have a responsibility to do something.
Sometimes I wonder how we sleep at night. Is it that we only see the world in black and white? Or deliberately close our eyes and stop our ears to the desperate cries of the children who we blame for their own plight? Tell me, how do we sleep at night? How do we sleep at night?
So I think that that's good. Or songs that convey an idea, songs that tell people about some sort of new way to view the world, or a way to enjoy the world, or a way to see something that maybe otherwise they would have neglected. I think those are good songs. So that's maybe coming from the motivational aspect of songwriting. So along those lines, songs that have a progression in terms of the lyrical content. So a song that starts in one place and takes the listener from that place to something new in the end seem to be more durable than songs that go nowhere. So songs that never move off of one idea and keep on returning to that one idea and don't build upon it seem to be weak and maybe wouldn't stand the test of time, I think. Wouldn't be satisfying for a listener after several listens. So in the folk tradition or the country tradition, you have songs that convey a story. So they're strict narrative type songs. So think of John Prine's Sam Stone, for instance. Songs like that will tell you a story that you will follow as a narrative from beginning to end. And along the way, you learn things about the character. There's a character, there's some sort of a plot, there's a setting. And in that sense, it's kind of like mini literature in a way. Also, songs that have some kind of a catchy tune, I think it's helpful to have something that can hook you, as the term would go, a hook. that will stick with you. I think that makes a song more durable. If the song has none of that, sometimes it's hard to hold on to anything in the song, and it just leaves the listener kind of wanting something more. And then musically, I think songs that develop, that have maybe a simplicity to them that's accessible. So not something that's so, because of the form, you don't want something that's so complex that you don't even know what's going on, that you can never get into it. So songs don't tend to be atonal, right? We have some kind of tonality to them, and they're easily accessible to the listener, but they often develop the ideas. They don't leave the ideas completely undeveloped. So a typical element of a good song would be a bridge, though of course not all songs need a bridge, but the bridge, for instance, gives you the chance to take a musical idea and go a different direction with it than what we've heard beforehand. And I think that that's a strong thing about song. I mean, there are many aspects of songs that would make them stronger for having them than they would be if they didn't have them. But I think that's a matter that's open to discussion. I think that's something that different songwriters have different opinions on, and different songwriters employ different techniques, and there's so much to learn. And that's really what it comes down to with the idea of a songwriter's roundtable, having people come together to discuss the nature of songwriting, to discuss the process of songwriting, the choices that are made along the way, why they were made, and whether they were effective or not, and what we can learn from a song that works really well, and what we can adopt from that, and what we can learn from songs that maybe don't work on the whole but have elements that excite us for one reason or another. What are those things that make us intrigued about them, and how can we put them into practice in our own writing?
Whom are you inviting, and how do you see the sessions unfolding?
Well, I've mentioned it to some songwriters that I know, and I've had a good response from those that I have spoken to. Some have committed already to coming and to joining the group, which I think will make it a very valuable experience for others who attend. So the songwriters that I've mentioned it to are a little more well-established, people who've been playing for a while in the area and who really have, I think, a lot of good experience to share with the group. But it's not open only to songwriters with a lot of experience. I especially want to open it up to songwriters who do this maybe in the comfort of their own room, who have not yet come out to share what they've done with others. I want it to be a very welcoming environment where people can be willing to come and share part of a song that's as yet unfinished, where they can say, I really have this idea that I think is good. I'd like to play part of it. I don't know what to do with this part, and I'm working that out. Maybe you have some suggestions for me, or maybe not. Maybe it could be something they completely develop on their own, but just to be able to feel comfortable to share what they're doing and not feel intimidated by the people that are there. So it's open to songwriters who have a lot of experience and a lot of background in writing songs and performing songs, but it's also open to those who have no such background or no such experience, who just do it as a hobby or on the side from some other passion that they might have or other obligations that they have. But then I believe it also should be open to the general public, so anybody who's just interested in songs. I think there are a lot of people who just love songs but don't play an instrument, never have tried to write a song, but just appreciate the form. And I think it's a good opportunity to see those in our communities who do write songs and to just support them by hearing what they do and just listening to the stories that they tell, listening to the work that they've done, the art that they're creating, and giving them a chance to share it with you is a way of just supporting them. Whether or not it ever becomes something like a financial support or anything along those lines, just hearing these artists, I think, is support enough to give them some recognition for what they have been doing. But then, in addition to songwriters with experience, songwriters without experience, the general public, I think opening it up to musicians who would not consider themselves songwriters is very important as well, because I think that would be very helpful for the sessions, just to contribute to the performance aspect of it. So let's say, for instance, we have someone who brings in a partially finished song or a fully finished song, but they're playing it as a solo, and they'd like to have maybe some other melody instrument come in to carry a melody line for a counter melody in an interlude or something like that. Maybe there would be instrumentalists on hand who might want to improvise something that maybe then could influence the development of the song itself and could become a new idea for that songwriter to adopt in their song. So I think those sorts of people would be valuable to have on hand. And then I think it's also exciting to invite visual artists. And I have this vision for having painters and people who draw in pencil or other mediums to come and sit in on the sessions and sketch the performances as they happen in the style of, say, a drawing social, where artists will come and gather together and draw a scene or draw whatever they're thinking of at the time. And I think it would be great for them to draw the performances or also to draw scenes that they hear in the songs. And I think that would be just so nice to provide a multimedia kind of experience and also to provide another way in which these songs can be fleshed out. It would be great, for instance, to have a story being told in a song and an artist in the back of the room sketching a small scene from that song, and then to have that sketch presented to the songwriter at the end, or some sort of cross-pollination among the different arts, I think is ultimately a goal that I would have, and I think that the Gathering Place would have.
We have an art gallery for local artists. So there are so many ways that this dovetails. We have a writers group. These aren't people who are going to publish on a major scale, although I won't rule that out. And so we have that composition going on in one form. We've got the art in the other, and we're blending this third component that we've been playing with on the periphery. So when Tim came to us, I couldn't resist. And at this point, I'm going to interject that we have to give credit to Overlook Estate Foundation. They're the ones who are funding this. I wear many hats. One is the programming and saying to people like this, yes, this is a great idea, let's move forward with it. And two, I write some of these grants. And we were ready to go without them. We hadn't heard. And I said, Tim, let's just do it without the money. We'll open the doors. And we got the money. And so now we can do some other things that we wouldn't have been able to do.
And this is what we're so excited about right now, because we've extended an invitation to Sylvie Simmons. She's a very well-experienced rock journalist. She started in L.A. in the 70s as a journalist for, I believe it was Sounds Magazine, I may be misspeaking, but she has a lot of experience with songwriters of all stripes. She's most well-known for, recently, her work on Leonard Cohen. She wrote a highly lauded biography of Leonard Cohen. It was, I think, NPR's Biography of the Year in 2015, I believe, when it came out. The book is an excellent work. I had the privilege of seeing her present at the gathering at Keystone last year, and I had never heard of her before that. And after I heard her speak, I went and purchased her book, and I read the book while I was listening through Leonard Cohen's whole catalog, and it felt like a course in Cohen that I might take at a university. It was just such a good experience, such a way to really get on the inside of all his works and kind of get greater insight into who he was and what went into these recordings, what went into these songs, and just the man behind the works. So she's very well known for that biography. She also published the liner notes to Johnny Cash's posthumous release entitled Unearthed. She was, I believe, the last person to interview Johnny Cash before he passed. And in addition to all this experience, she's also a very good songwriter in her own right. And she has recently been signed to Light in the Attic Records and has a new release out that she's been touring and performing. So she's just the perfect sort of person to have come make a presentation to a small group just to share her insights on the craft of songwriting and songwriters, and her insights as a songwriter herself and an excellent journalist. So we're still working on confirming her attendance because she's finalizing some of her tour plans. But as of yet, she's really excited and enthused about it, and she's doing all she can to come in April. Again, we're not saying that that's a firm commitment because she's still finalizing her plans, but we're very excited at the prospect of having her come. And I think that just demonstrates the kind of value that can come out of these sorts of sessions.
If you are ready to pick up your guitar and talk about this process that songwriting is.
Yeah. So I write songs in different ways, as all songwriters, I'm sure, will say. Sometimes you have a song come to you in this context or another. Sometimes it really comes in large chunks, or sometimes you really have to struggle through it. And I often had written in one mode where I would sort of sit down with an instrument, whether it be the piano or the guitar, and then try to just work out a song from start to finish. And I would usually focus on the lyrics first, so I would work on writing something out, and then I'd take the little bit that I'd written and I'd bring it to the instrument and start trying to come up with a melody to it and put it together, and then I'd sort of let them develop together at that point. And then I was trying this different approach for a while where I'd drive to a park somewhere. I found that the setting that I was in was very helpful. So I'd go to a park, someplace where I was by myself, and I would just think for a little bit and then just try to write on some specific idea and try to work it out from start to finish lyrically. So I would have the whole content of the lyrics pretty much in their entirety. I would need to make edits later on, but I would write it all out, and then later I would take it to an instrument. So I would develop all the lyrics completely apart from an instrument and completely apart from any musical idea. So that's the way this song developed, and it was kind of a new technique for me at the time. And I was actually listening to John Prine before I wrote this song, and I was trying to move a little more in the direction of using the storytelling techniques and then also some of the great symbolism that he uses. For instance, he refers in one song to "I will drink like wine and eat like the wafer" as a reference to the Eucharist, but he's using it as a metaphor for something. And I liked the way that he used that language, and it gave me a little bit of inspiration there. And then I put in some references to John Prine in the song. Now, if you were to just listen to this, you wouldn't say that it was John Prine, but nevertheless, that was an inspiration for me along the way. So I was sitting in Lazybrook Park in Tunkhannock, looking at the creek and just thinking about the sun on the water, and then some lines started to come to me, and I'll interrupt my playing to tell you a little bit about it as I go here. So it started out like this. I got the words, "Moses sent me a postcard," and I ripped it like a ticket in two. I thought to hand the stub to my neighbor to tell him of the show that's about to debut. So, and then when I brought it back to an instrument, I came up with this sort of melody. Moses sent me a postcard, and I ripped it like a ticket in two. I thought to hand the stub to my neighbor and tell him of the show that's about to debut. But I felt once the show got started, I would regret ever letting him in, because there's something about progress and potential that sounds an awful lot like a family sin, like the ripple on the banks of a lazy river, like the fringes of a shadow on the summer ground. It's a thing that just keeps moving on forever. It's a thing that you can't ever quite nail down. So that was the first little part that I had, and you'll see in that section I had a verse. The first verse is always the easiest one, I think, and then after that you kind of struggle through the rest of them, and maybe they start to play on each other and they start to develop a little more quickly. But in the case of this song, it wasn't just the first verse that came easily. All these verses basically came out very quickly, and this was unusual for me, so I just kind of followed it. Maybe it was because I was listening to so many good songwriters at the time. But I had this image of Moses sending me a message, so there's some kind of message that directed to people generally from these systems, and I think of that message as a postcard. And then as a transition to the next line, I thought of that postcard as being something that's handed to me, almost like a ticket would be handed to me before I go into something that I'm going to experience, that I'm going to see. So I take that message and I tear it like a ticket in two. And I think the effect of that on the listener is kind of a little bit of surprise. When Moses sends me a postcard, that first line kind of catches you, and then I ripped it like a ticket in two, suddenly we take it in a completely different direction. And I think that that's a technique that is at least interesting, and it's one technique in writing songs. But for this song, I sort of stuck with that shifting from one term or idea to another image sort of midstream and kind of letting the song develop that way. And I thought I'd hand that stub, that invitation, that ticket to my neighbor. I thought I'd share that good news of this system that I knew with my neighbor and tell them of this show that's about to debut. Tell them about this new thing that would be coming based on the information that I received. But then I decided that I didn't want to invite everybody in because I wasn't necessarily sure about the information that I received, that kind of idea. And because there were things in it that seemed like an old story. So that's where this line comes in, because there's something about progress and potential, all these promises of systems to help develop us into something better than ourselves, that sounded an awful lot like the main human ambition that kind of took everyone down, this idea of improving ourselves in the future by our own kind of efforts. And then this is where the scene of the lazy river came in, and I turned it into a chorus, and that was a choice that happened later. like a ripple on the banks of a lazy river. And that was specifically what I was seeing there. These things that we try to aim toward are kind of like the ripple that you see on the banks that you can never quite get a hold of, that always seems to change as you look at it. If you've ever seen a ripple, it kind of comes and goes and you can't quite hold on to it, or the fringes of a shadow that you can't quite catch. They keep on moving as the sun moves and they always transition. It's a thing that just keeps moving on forever, a thing you can't ever quite nail down. So all of these kinds of systems that help us to make ourselves better than we inherently are, maybe are not quite things that we can define well enough to actually make them work as a whole. So that's just one example of a technique in songwriting.
It's wonderful. And one of the things that I love about it is the cultural aspect of bringing Northeastern Pennsylvania into this metaphor, your biblical vision, but that it's this area and it's the beauty and the celebration of this area.
Right.
And those are the kinds of things that we want at the gathering place.
Right. It's very inspirational just to listen to good writers. And that's my hope when we get some of these good writers in our area to come together and just to share their work and to encourage one another just by giving an outlet for performing their original work, and to have people come with the expectation that they're there to learn and listen and they're there to contribute and participate. And I think it's also in the spirit of the gathering place and other cultural organizations to say that art is uplifting for our communities. Art contributes to our feeling of well-being and to our real well-being, and that we are all participants in that. And there's none of us that are spectators, and we can't afford to be spectators and sit by and listen to the professionals or the airbrush pictures and say, we wish we could be like that, but we know we can't. Instead, we need to realize that we can. There are many good things that we can do right here, right now. And there are many people that are already doing that in our communities. And that's what these places exist for.
Singer-songwriter Tim Ziegler of Wyoming County and Paula Bailey, board member and program coordinator of The Gathering Place in Clark Summit, speaking with us about the Songwriters Roundtable to take place the third Sunday of each month into the spring, beginning on January 21st and continuing through April 15th at 7 o'clock in the evening at The Gathering Place, 304 South State Street in Clark Summit. For more information on the web, gatheringplacecs.org, gatheringplacecs.org. You can also find them on Facebook. As we heard from Tim, the Songwriters Roundtable is open to songwriters of all experiences and all ages and musicians and artists and people who just love singer-songwriters and songs and music. And everyone will gather at The Gathering Place on Sunday evenings into April and discuss the craft, listen to music, share songs, and hope that there will be a visit from Sylvia Simmons in April. For more information on the web, it's gatheringplacecs.org, gatheringplacecs.org, and you can also find them on Facebook, January 21st, February 18th, March 4th, April 15th at 7 o'clock. And if the singers gather wonderfully and enjoy the occasion, the Songwriters Roundtable may be a perpetual thing at The Gathering Place. And that's part of the creative process at The Gathering Place. There is a response to community needs. It's thegatheringplacecs.org, gatheringplacecs.org.